I'm going to switch gears just a little bit now. Dr. Barry Taff is kind of a rarity, as I said at the beginning of the program, a rarity in the sense that he's a man of science who investigates weird stuff. He's over four decades, he's investigated more than 4,500 cases of ghosts, hauntings, poltergeists, and he's conducted extensive studies in telepathy and precognition. He's developed initial protocols and methodologies for what was later termed remote viewing. He's consulted government and business and law enforcement, CIA, Office of Naval Intelligence, the NSA, and a lot of other folks with initials. He's investigated cases that ultimately became movies and TV shows, and you're going to know some of them immediately. When we return, we get into the heart of it with Dr. Barry Taff. Welcome back. Dr. Barry Taff holds a doctorate in psychophysiology with a minor in biomedical engineering. He's a world-renowned parapsychologist. He's worked out of UCLA's former parapsychology lab from 69 through 78. And as I said a couple of minutes ago, has investigated thousands of cases, some of the most celebrated and most interesting and frightening cases in the poltergeist, haunting, ghost realm, perhaps more than any other man of science. Barry, it's great to have you back on the program.
Thank you, George. It's a pleasure to be here.
So are you still actively investigating cases?
Well, not at this moment, because I almost died in 2015.
What happened?
And, long story short, I was visiting a friend in the desert, and I collapsed twice. And he took me to the ER. I don't even remember going in. And I woke up the next day with tubes coming out of my body. Long story short, I had acute prostatitis. My prostate swelled up so large that my kidneys could no longer drain into my bladder. And you can die from that. And there were no symptoms. I just kept passing out. And so I was in the hospital for 5 weeks.
Did you get sepsis?
Yeah, no. I was just to the edge of getting that, but I didn't get it. But anyway, I was in the hospital for 5 weeks. The tubes coming out of my kidneys and a Foley catheter on. I couldn't urinate directly. And then, then I had to stay in a nursing home for a year because I wasn't functional enough yet to be on my own. And then after that, my kidneys had healed enough they could pull out the nephrostomy tubes, and I was able to urinate directly. They took out the Foley catheter, but I had to stay in another nursing home for 9 months to make sure there wasn't any follow-up, any recurring situations. So that drained me of most of the money I had. And I had to give up my car because of it.
Oh, my God.
And I almost died. So then I came to live with a friend in Rancho Mirage. And then we moved from that house to another house. We were in Palm Desert. And what's so odd about the timing of all this is that my friend I've known for more than a quarter of a century. And I only knew him as a business associate. They hired me to do some technical writing back in the 90s for a company they put together. And so I knew him, but not well. I just knew that he had never had a paranormal experience in his life. Long story short, I move into his home in 2017, in April 2017. And within 5 weeks of being there, paranormal phenomena breaks out. Disembodied voices, objects are appearing and disappearing. People are yelling, light machines going on or off. And it happened to me a few times. My friend heard it. And why is this happening at my age, given my condition here and now? So we finally moved to a better house. And it was better, quieter. I thought, well, nothing will happen here. Within 4 or 5 months, things began happening here. And it just anything, luminous anomalies, disembodied voices, apparitions, the whole nine yards. And why? Why is this happening around my friend and I when these types of events have never happened around me before? Now, this is where it gets really interesting, George. We've learned that being exposed to certain energies, if you're susceptible to them, will alter your nervous system. In a way, it modifies you. We don't need to understand how. And you begin to propagate this energy from yourself under the right conditions in the right environment. So I was on a case from 2005 to 2006. I went there 21 times. I ended up in the hospital 19 times after going there. very, very turbulent case in Benedict Canyon. Anyway, long story short, all the stuff's going on in this new house. Why? Why around my friend and me? What's the point? He's never had anything. And he was talking to me months ago after a flurry of things happened here. And he's telling me some meds he was on. He'd had some health problems. He's a generation younger than me. And one of the medications he refers to me is one that it's an anticonvulsant. And I went, whoa, why? Well, he's had focal seizures. I go, oh, here we go. The most common somatic connection to anything paranormal I've ever observed or documented is the fact that an extraordinarily high percentage of poltergeist agents, people who are prone to having these things happen, are either seizure prone or epileptic. However, most people who are seizure prone or epileptic are not poltergeist agents. So my friend was taking these meds, they took them off it, and suddenly all this stuff started happening around here. What a coincidence. Another example of what history has taught us.
Well, we're going to get into some examples of where that pops up in your work and the cases that you've investigated. I was going to say that's a theme through a lot of your research over the years. And I wanted to ask you it in the context of something. I don't know if you followed it at all, but we've written 10, 15 years ago, I wrote a co-wrote a book about a place called Skinwalker Ranch. And in the years since then, there was a government study, a secret Pentagon study that used the ranch as a lab. And several of the military people who went there, in fact, several of the, if not a majority of the people who had visited that ranch for research purposes over the years, have brought something home with them. It's as if something attaches itself. They call it, the Native Americans who live there call it a hitchhiker. And I wanted to know if that sort of pops up in your research. And I guess maybe you've just answered it in a way. It does pop up that way for certain people.
But first, let me say that the book Hunt for the Skinwalker is superbly written. You did an extraordinary job. Clear, definitive information, compelling, exciting, thoughtful, and provocative. And I read the whole thing in one take. I could not stop reading it. It's a great job. I read all the stuff that's followed it and the theories about what's going on. And what we've learned now is there are certain prerequisites to being a poltergeist agent. Let's put it here, a good analogy. You've got a DVD in your hand. You want to watch what's on the DVD. What do you need? Well, you need the DVD player. You need a television. They've got to be connected, and both must be plugged into the wall, be an outlet. And then you need a remote. And you put the DVD in, and voila, there's images on the screen before you. Okay. Same thing must it seems to be true when you're dealing with the psychokinetic manifestations. There are several variables that must or parameters that must work in relationship. One is location, location, location. Strong electromagnetic anomalous field or anomalous geomagnetic field. Two is an individual who is hypersensitive to these types of energies, which is a very small percentage of the human population. I'd say less than 5%, maybe 1%. Also, someone who's hypersensitive to electromagnetic and magnetic energy to begin with. Then you need someone who also is seizure prone or epileptic, even if they don't know it. A lot of people are seizure prone. They never get kindled to the point of having a seizure, thankfully. And in fact, the very first time I was on Coast to Coast, a long, long time ago, following that appearance, I got all kinds of calls, and all these people were telling me about they're on medication for epilepsy, and when they stop taking it, all this stuff transpires around them. Okay, so these are things that have to be important. Then we also have these individuals have to, they have a poor coping mechanism for dealing with stress, psychophysical stress around them. And if all those work together in concert, you get one more element, and that is what I would refer to as inductive resonance coupling. Means that if you meet all the other criteria of this a pattern, your nervous system must be in the same frequency bandwidth, for lack of a better term, of that environment, and it resonates, an induction. And when that happens, you become the laser on the DVD. And knowing this, you could do studies using very expensive imaging technology to determine what's really going on when this happens. But if you were a medical doctor or just, you know, working in the field of medicine, and you did work in this area, you'd never work again. Your career would end very abruptly because people would think you're crazy. And this is where it gets really weird, George, really weird. The energies involved in poltergeist stuff make things fly around the room, massive objects, make people be thrown, banging noises, smashing noises, spontaneous combustion of matter, cold spots, ports, objects appearing and disappearing. The energy involved with it, whatever it is, it's not electromagnetic, it's not nuclear, and it's not gravitational, but it can affect all of them. And the way this unknown energy, let's call it zero point for lack of a better term, the way this unknown energy couples with us is to our biomagnetic field, not the electric field, the biomagnetic field. And in case after case, take out engineering-grade instruments to measure the environment. Now, measuring electrical fields is really easy. Measuring magnetic fields is more difficult for very various reasons. We can measure people's electric field like there's no tomorrow. No big deal. Biomagnetic fields, though, are extremely weak comparatively, like three orders of magnitude weaker, if not more so. So if you try to measure their biomagnetic field with a handheld instrument, you get no reading. However, if you put it near a poltergeist agent body, you're seeing these bursts of magnetic flux coming out of their body, but not around normal people's bodies, which means their bodies are putting out thousands, maybe tens of thousands of times more energy than the average person. So this is the pattern, and it's extremely consistent. It's the faces may change, places may change, but the events do not.
You know, every time I go onto your website, I can kiss away an hour or two because I get stuck there reading these incredible cases. And even though you're not able to get out and do field work right now, you are able to write about the amazing cases that you've already investigated and take new hints at it. Your name just kind of popped into my head about 3 weeks ago, and I asked myself, I wonder what Barry Taff is doing these days. I sent myself an email thinking, you know, I should reach out to him. It's been a long time since he was on the show, not realizing that you would not have been able to be on the show for years. Yeah.
Yeah, I was. I would have to do it in my sleep. But go ahead.
I had said, you mentioned some similarities in cases that run through a lot of the research that you've done. And I want to start with one that you wrote about in September of 2014. It's called A Poltergeist Case to Remember. And this sort of goes along with where we started this conversation, whether things can attach themselves to people and they carry them around. And there's a photo of the striking blonde on the page where you write about this case. And it seems like she is somebody who carried this thing wherever she goes. You wrote sort of jokingly that what are the chances that this woman, Lisa, would live in a haunted house five times in a row? Well, it's like hitting the lottery five times in a row, but in a bad way. But that's what. So pick up the story and sort of fill us in on why this is an amazing case.
About 15 years ago, my colleague Barry Conrad and I, we worked together on many, many cases. He meets this really beautiful girl named Lisa. Okay, so they meet, they get along, she's going to move out here, she moves in with them, it's great. She's a wonderful girl, and she goes out in our first case with us to help us with, you know, monitoring things and taking photos and video. Okay. And she's been interested in these, but she never talked about having frequently common experiences. So, okay, we go out in the case, nothing great, interesting case, did measurements that showed nothing of interest. The people that living in the home sounded a little strange. What I've learned is not only much do you listen to what they say in response to your question, but how they say it. But anyway, we come home the next day, phenomena starts around Lisa. And it was just one thing after another. Banging noises, luminous anomalies in Barry Conrad's home in La Crescenta. And what's so amazing about the case is Lisa became, again, there were these flurry of activity, like boom, 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 things happening. Like I'd be sitting in the Barca lounger downstairs watching TV in Barry's home, and something struck the chair with such ferocity that I jumped out of the chair. I thought like a bomb went off under it. Things burst in the flame in Barry's house. The phone would start ringing, but no calls were coming in. Lights would go on and off. They hear sounds like he had a beautiful new TV. He bought a giant TV and audio sound system. Sounded like it crashed to the floor, which of course it didn't. They had the dog, and the dog was freaking out around certain things. So it went on and on and on. And now, this is interesting. Lisa started getting symptoms of a cold. She was sick a lot, wasn't feeling well. And, you know, she didn't have health insurance. She thought, well, she was young. Because how bad can it be? And she didn't want to do it. And it would come and go and come and go. And when she was healthy, the phenomena was like a machine gun, bum, 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 bum. I mean, it was so intense. We'd all be going out to dinner, Barry Conrad, Lisa, and myself, prior to a case, and phenomena happened in the restaurant while we were there, in the car while we were in the car. Coming back, these beeping noises coming from nowhere, and, you know, our cell phones were off. Barry had a pager back then, for whatever reason, I needed a pager, that was off, and I was asking whatever it was, questions. Barry and Lisa were in the front seat of the van. I was in the back. And it was beeping out answers to my question. Not there, I considered to be valid. But what's intriguing is Lisa started getting sick. And, no, you know, she didn't really go have any diagnosis performed. Long story short, when she got sick, the phenomena waned. It almost like a cork went into it. It stopped happening. And luckily, when these events occurred, either I was there or they kept notes, Barry and Lisa. They gave me the dates and the times. Now, at one point, Barry and Lisa are watching TV in his living room, and they hear some banging noises in the kitchen. So they and their dog get up and walk towards the kitchen. The lights weren't on, but it was still enough light where you could see. And they just about to enter that part of the house, and they see a gigantic letter M, like in Mary, and it's grayish brown. It's really big, and it's undulating and twisting like it's made of rubber, and it's moving, and the dog is freaking out. It gets into an attack posture, it growls, and it runs upstairs. And, okay, then the thing's gone. We thought, what's M? What's M? Lisa's last name started with an M, I believe, but that's too obvious. And then, I think 23 weeks later, something like that, whatever it was, it's in the article on my website, Lisa is diagnosed with a very disturbing illness of bone cancer called multiple myeloma, MM.
Oh, man.
I didn't know what that illness was. Lisa never heard of it.
We're talking with Dr. Barry Taff about some really strange cases that he's personally investigated, poltergeist, ghosts, hauntings. Going to get back into this one and go on to the Manson murder house. A lot more still to come. We're talking with Dr. Barry Taff about paranormal, supernatural, things of that sort. His most recent book was called Aliens Above, Ghosts Below. You should check it out. It's great. And it sort of draws conclusions and connections between seemingly unrelated parapsychological or paranormal phenomena that you might not think were related, but which in fact may be, as Dr. Taff explains to us. By the way, I had mentioned about George Norrie taking his roadshow out and about this summer and into the fall. He's got a good one coming to Everett, Washington, live stage show September 26, 2020 at the historic Everett Theater in that town. And you better get tickets to this one pretty quick because it's going to go fast. In addition to George and his producer, Tom Danheiser, a Bigfoot expert anthropologist, Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum, will be there. 411 author and investigator Dave Politis, who's been our guest many times on this program. Mysticism scholar John Hoag, who will do readings for audience members. They got a live band. There'll be a meet and greet that follows the show. If you want to get these tickets, you can call the Everett Theater, or you can look for the link on the Coast to Coast website for more information. We'll be right back with Barry Taff, get into some of these really, truly weird cases that he's investigated here on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Taff, the case we're talking about that's on your website under the title A Poltergeist Case to Remember, you go down the list. You shared with us only a tiny fraction of the different events that happened in this house to your friends, and you were there for a lot of them, and they're documented hour by hour, day by day. That kind of evidence, you know, if you're reading it, it's compelling. But I can see your colleagues in scientific pursuits would say, that's not evidence of anything. If somebody doesn't want to believe it, that's what's, you know, show me video of a poltergeist, you know, on camera. Show me the wounds that are caused by the interaction with whatever this thing is, right?
Yeah, but it goes even beyond that, George. It's so, for the skeptics and the debunkers, whether they be academicians or not, it appears that reason and logic go out the window when they deal with things. Very quick aside here. The lab was still open at UCLA, I was involved with two areas. One is investigations of hauntings and poltergeists, as we're talking about now. The other was I wanted to see whether people could be trained to become psychic. We could take normal, stable people who had never had any prior experiences, and you could develop it within them. And we found that in a small percentage of the people, it was possible. However, I want to focus just one story. We get tired of doing the real-time ESP, the remote viewing. It was boring. We could do it. It was almost no big deal. However, we decided to do our first precognitive session. And the idea was the last session of that day's lab, we would try to describe the randomly chosen target of 1 week in the future. We didn't know who they would be. Anything about the first, because they hadn't been visited our lab yet. So he described a tall blonde woman, blue-eyed, very striking, model-esque, beautiful tan beige pantsuit, gorgeous. She sat in one of the 24 chairs in the room that had numbers under it, which you could not see. We saw a three-story house in the Hollywood Hills, a baby grand piano. Okay, so we said, and we saw a man dressed in black, head to foot black. Hat, mask, sword, cape, clothing, gloves, boots. We thought we were losing our minds. So the next week, real quickly, new people come in that had never been there before. Each of the new people are given a sealed envelope with a number inside of it. We then sit down, we roll dice, a number shows up, and we say, all right, open your little packets. Whosever number matches the dice roll, you're it. And the girl goes, it fits me. Now, we forgot what we had said the week before. And so we told her, take the tape, get the control. If it relates to you, stop it. If not, let it go. Positive feedback, reinforcement. That's the whole thing. So she starts hearing a description of herself. Perfect. Clothing, face, hair, eyes. Even the color of the clothing. The one chair we named, she said, and of her own accord. We let people go wherever they want. Except the chair where I had the controls for recording. Okay. Turns out she grew up in a three-story home in the Hollywood Hills. Could have happened to anyone. Baby grand piano. Other people have baby grand pianos. The tall man dressed in black with the sword and the cape. And she stopped and she looks at us. She goes, how do you know who I am? Huh. We went, what? How do you know who I am? What are you talking about? She goes, I'm Tony Williams. I said, and? Don't you know who my father is? No? Guy Williams. He played Zorro.
Zorro.
And then she went, wait a minute. When did you make this tape? a week ago. But I didn't know I was coming here till a few hours ago, and I was chosen randomly. So how could you have? Yes, how could we have? Now, the end result of this story wasn't just her being shocked and us being amazed. It was that academic friends of mine, academicians, I was relating the story more depth than I'm doing now, and they said, oh, we guessed. I said, what? We guessed as describing Zorro. Anyone could have described Zorro. What? And I forgot. I did some number crunching to determine what the probability would be of guessing, describing Zorro, that would happen to fit the girl who was randomly chosen a week later to participate in our group. Her father had played Zorro. And it was like 4 × 10^36. Huh? But we guessed.
Yeah.
See, this is the problem. When the hard-nosed skeptics get involved, they don't care what they're shown. They don't want to believe, and they're not going to believe. And what I've found is when these things violate what we think are physical laws, people get all bent out of shape. And the opening of our conversation this evening, you spoke about people leaving the Skinwalker Ranch. They felt like things came home with them.
Yeah.
We've had cases like this as well. 1989, another case I worked on with my friend Barry Conrad. It was in San Pedro on 11th Street. Barry wrote a wonderful book on the case called An Unknown Encounter, and also has a video by the name. It really did a great job of documenting things. And one of the most intriguing things, I don't know if he's completed the writing on this, because I haven't read the book in some time, even though it's locked away somewhere in a closet here. The woman's name was Jackie Hernandez. That was a married name. Her maiden name was Jackie Hazard, which is appropriate given what was going on with her. Apparitions, blood dripping out of the walls, things flying around, luminous anomalies. Anyway, Jackie finally was able to move from her little hut, her little almost like a guest house in San Pedro, and she moved up to Weldon, California, up near Bakersfield. Now, we had not gotten a lot of publicity yet for the case because we had completed the work. But she moved out. New tenants who moved in, who knew nothing about the prior occupant, they began having phenomena similar to Jackie. Apparitions, luminous anomalies, voices, weird liquid coming out of the walls, which couldn't be explained. Meantime, Jackie moved up north, and the phenomena was continuing to happen with her. So there were still occurrences in the original location, yet her body got so charged up by this, she kept emitting this stuff, and it was ripping the hell out of her new environment.
In the case that we're talking about, I didn't go into all the details, and we wouldn't have time because there's dozens, scores of these different incidents that happen, a lot of them involving animals. You have dogs that are being sort of tossed around and who seem to be able to sense something, see things, hear things. There are other things that everybody can hear, loud sounds, hammer sounds, things moving around. Is the connection to animals that happened in this case we're talking about, is that common or is that uncommon?
It depends on the animal. Dogs seem to be a little more sensitive to it than cats, although I've run across cases where cats react to this stuff as well. It's almost like they can see what we can't, or maybe they're affected by the strong magnetic fields in these environments that we interpret as being cold. It's just making the hair on our body stand up a little more straight. It's called a piloerection, and it makes the strong magnetic field makes us the hair stand up, which makes us feel cold. What's bizarre is that, I named this effect. I just described with Jackie, her leaving the phenomenal thing with her, plus staying at the original house, as a psychovirus. Had all the qualities of a biologic manifestation, but it was energetic.
Huh.
And if you're susceptible, theoretically can affect you. Most people, nothing. You're the right person, right time, right place, boom. You act as what I call the biological operational amplifier. your body is able to absorb, mix up, and re-emit this under the right conditions.
You're going into these cases looking for an answer, not looking for ghosts. You're not there to document a poltergeist. You're trying to explain what seems to be inexplicable activity, right?
Well, yes and no. The job, why I have all these instruments, there's two ways of conducting research. One is in a lab under controlled conditions. You create a form of hypothesis. You conduct experiments to prove, you know, this and whatever, disprove that. Okay, that's science. But in some instances, you can't bring this stuff into a lab. You have to go out in the field and track it down, hoping that you're there at the right time and it, whatever it is, demonstrates itself to you while you're present, which means that you're left with looking over a long period of time and a lot of data collected, hoping to see longitudinal patterns in the data. And they are there, and they're blatant as hell. They're not sometimes there, they're always there. And so once in a while we're lucky. Mike, I just mentioned, Barry Conrad was fortunate in the San Pedro case to capture these incredible luminous things zipping around Jackie and in Jackie's house. Yet to the naked eye, they were invisible.
They're always there. They're always there, but they only show themselves to people when they feel like it. I've had colleagues that you probably know who liken it to a performance, a display, and they call the shots, whatever they are.
But it even gets weirder than that, George. And this is why. In the Entity case, 1974, Culver City, California, Braddock Drive. We won't get into this full case, but real quickly. We saw these luminous anomalies zipping around the room, always lime green, pitch black environment. We sealed it off from all external lighting. These lights zipping around. And at one point, we got a picture, but we never were able to photograph what we saw. And what we photographed, okay, we never photographed what we saw, and we didn't see. Which is what? And it makes no sense. At one time, Doris Beither, who was the focus of this investigation in Culver City, was on her bed cowering, the light zipping around her. And what you see in the photograph, it's on my website and it's in my book, you see this incredible luminous arc framing Doris Beither. And what's important for people to understand that if you look behind Doris, there are two walls that meet at a perpendicular 90-degree angle. The light is not bent in accordance with the wall, which demonstrates the light is in space, free space. It is not a projected light source. We never saw that. We saw light zipping all over the place. Another shot, Doris was not in frame. You see another arc, two arcs, one going top to top, one going bottom to bottom. And we had the camera and the film investigators studied by the West Coast editor of Popular Photography back then. And he said, I don't know, I've never seen anything like this. The lenses and SLR cameras, remember, this is before digital technology, make this impossible. Adrian Vance was the our friend, and he did an analysis of this, and he published an article in Popular Photography on our case and our photograph. He says, I don't know what it is. It's not an artifact of the camera. It's not an artifact of the photography process, of in processing the film. Now, you see, that this is where it gets even weirder. Back in 1978, I was going to, supposed to go on some talk show, and we were called in for an interview at CBS Television City on the southeast corner of Fairfax and Beverly Boulevard. So I've been there before, you know, being interviewed by the production assistants, and they're talking to us. They were taking a picture of my colleague and I. And my colleague, being kind of a wise ass, he says, Barry doesn't show up in pictures all the time. And I go, yeah, right, he's a vampire. And I said to my colleague, why did you say that? They'll think we're nuts. And I smiled. They take a picture of us with a Polaroid SX70. The picture develops, and the girl, as it develops, comes out of the camera, and they're looking at it going, oh, God. I'm looking at them, and they're going, and they turn. The girls, this color drained from their face. They put the picture on the desk and kind of moved back. My colleague, who is only a little bit to my right, maybe a foot and a half to my right, is clear as can be. All you see where I am, all that was there was a mass of light. No face, no hair, no body, like I'm not there. when I graduated high school, 1967, it took four visits to the photographer to get one picture they could use of me. They said, there's always these fogs around you, like it looks like you're in a cloud. Well, don't like being photographed. In pictures I took of my parents long ago, in only the frames I took, there were luminous anomalies. In frames other people took, there were not.
I want to ask you about the Entity case. You mentioned it, 1974. Mm-hmm. It's very famous. Anyone who has seen the movie will remember it in a heartbeat because it was very spooky. And it had the central scene, the one that everyone would remember, would be basically the rape of a woman by a specter of some sort, a demon, an entity, a poltergeist. You've sort of rained on that parade a little bit in writing about it, in that you don't think that's what happened.
Well, okay, I do believe there was paranormal phenomena going on. There's no question about that. But it's the source and nature of it that I question. I mean, I was 25 years old at the time. It was interesting hearing Doris Beither speak of this, and the very first thing she said, she'd been repeatedly raped by ghosts. Oh, God, put my head in my forehead. I'm going, oh, Jesus. We rolled our eyes back, thinking this woman's psychotic. She was very evasive and cryptic. She wouldn't even give us her age, which nowadays, the interview people, if they won't give us information we're asking for, we get up and we leave because we're wasting our time and their time. So we still thanked her for her time. We told her to call UCLA Neuropsychiatric Institute, where our lab was, and talk to a psychiatrist there. You may have luck. Maybe they can help you. We thought she needed psychiatric intervention, not parapsychologists. Anyway, 10 days later, she called us. Friends and neighbors had witnessed stuff. We go back, and we're in the kitchen. And by the way, the house... it was a very hot summer. It was August of 1974, really hot and humid. And we go in the house.
I'll tell you what, Barry, I'm sorry to interrupt. That's a terrible place, but we're about to go to a break. So when we come back, we're going to pick it up right there. It's very hot in this house in August. And this is the story of the Entity, which, again, if you've seen the movie, you wouldn't forget it because it's a well-documented, very strange case. But it may not be exactly as was portrayed in the film. So we're talking with Dr. Barry Taff about his investigations into the paranormal, Aliens Above and Ghosts Below is the title of a book.